What's up, guys? Welcome to this very special episode of the Sat Signal on the Unemployable Channel. I am here with none other than Tony Yazbek from the Bitcoin Way. You probably recognize neither of us at the moment because we never dress like this. You don't often catch Bitcoiners in suits.
Absolutely not. We're usually, you know, like the hidden cypherpunks in the background preaching the gospel of freedom.
So maybe, Tony, tell people where we are, and then we're going to launch into this special episode. I think you guys are going to love this. Where are we right now?
We have unexpectedly landed in Kuala Lumpur at the Nomad Capitalist event. You know, the theme of this whole 3 days is about hope. And of course, you know, Bitcoin fits smack into that playground. And, you know, we decided to have a footprint here to see, first of all, what's the message that's being spread out, you know, at events like this, and hopefully, you know, have our little dent in the whole thing.
Yeah. So, you know, this event's fantastic. It's full of pirates of a different color. Like, yeah, when you go to a Bitcoin event, it literally is pirates, but here it's pirates in suits. So, so what we're going to do, guys, is I'm going to spend a bit of time talking to Tony because, you know, every week I receive comments and feedback and emails and people flick me reels. And I'm going to kick off this episode because talking about signal versus noise. And in the Bitcoin world, this is a phrase that we refer to, or a term that's in our vernacular. And it was inspired by this particular video that about 50 people sent me in my Instagram DMs. And some of this stuff is a little bit above my pay grade because I'm not as technical as Tony is. But Tony, maybe before I show you this video, which has caused a bit of stir within the Bitcoin community, and for new Bitcoiners, it's very common when you start down the Bitcoin journey, your friends start sending you reels. And the thing about Instagram and YouTube is that it incentivizes drama and it incentivizes noise, right? But before we jump in and show this video that a lot of you sent me, and I want Tony's take on it. Tony, tell me what you were telling me about an hour ago when we were smoking cigars here and having a whiskey about your background in the hacking world. Like, what is your background prior to Bitcoin? Where did you come from?
When I first started in tech, my background, my teachings were all by black hat hackers, so to speak. Yeah. I mean, I grew up in the world of, you know, IRCs, internet relay chats, talking and learning from some of the best minds that you never see in any public space. And I just fell in love with that world. I mean, it was so captivating, and I inhaled all the knowledge that they were throwing at me, which you know, eventually led to my career in tech, networking, cybersecurity, in the world of encryption and privacy. It all stems from these roots, and there's no book out there that'll really teach you a lot of these things to this day, rather than from someone who lives and breathes and builds, you know, the tools and the hardware to do unbelievable things.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin falls into that world, man. Yeah. I mean, Bitcoin is cypherpunk at the roots. And so a lot of the big brains behind it, you know, come from that world, yeah, which is absolutely fascinating.
So for those of you who don't know what Tony does, just to contextualize this conversation, in 2 minutes, Tony, I know a lot of the audience knows your story, but just quickly, how did you come around to starting the Bitcoin Way,
yeah,
which is the world's leader in teaching people how to properly self-custody their Bitcoin? How did that come about for you?
I spent an entire career in tech, and you know, up to about 2018, 2019, I was, so to speak, retired in Beirut, you know, living the life that everybody said I should be living now that, you know. And unfortunately, I became a casualty of a very, very bad surprise, which was the collapse of the entire banking world in Beirut, where essentially the governments and central banks seized every civilian's savings account, leaving you with nothing, literally overnight. I remember this like it happened 5 minutes ago. We had gone out the night prior to that, having a nice time, and then woke up at 7 a.m. to the news that you're bankrupt. You know, like in the moment, you think this is some sort of sick joke, but you know, it doesn't take very long before you realize that no, this is not a joke. The cards don't work. There's no one at the bank. There's no one answering the phones anywhere, and you just have to deal with this.
Yeah.
So the shock of the moment is so surreal that it took me a few hours to really, for it to settle down, to settle in, to know if it's actually, you know, like some sort of sick joke, or if in fact this is what happened. And when you realize that, you know, this is it, that's when, you know, my whole story started to unfold. And it's a very, very dark period of my life. There's a lot of it that I don't share online because, you know, of everything that unfolded thereafter. But it is the ugliest movie any living soul can live through. And I sincerely do not wish it upon anyone.
Yeah.
But, you know, after you live and survive something like this, your lens on the world changes in a way that, you know, you cannot go back.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we teach here. Eventually, all the roads and all this horrific series of events led me to finding solutions.
Yes.
I needed to find answers. Otherwise, you know, things would have escalated in a way that are just unspeakable.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I came across Bitcoin. And, you know, coming from the world of cybersecurity, of course, I had my doubts. I didn't want to set myself up for another disappointment, thinking, you know, like this is like just a beacon of hope only to have it blow up again in my face. So I used my knowledge to tear it apart. And of course, I failed, you know, miserably, and which led me further down that rabbit hole. And then when I realized that, you know, many governments have also tried to destroy this thing, and with all their unlimited resources, they also failed spectacularly. That's really, I think, when I smiled for the first time after almost a year.
Yeah.
And this is how the journey began.
And today, Bitcoin for you, it's not a business, it's a mission. And it's a mission to teach people how to never, ever have to rely on banks, to be truly self-sovereign. So let's dive into, like, I want to kick off with this because a lot of people watching this, they're early in the journey. And when you're early in the journey, you're like a nervous cat, right? Like any little sign when you've like put all of your superannuation into Bitcoin, or you've, you know, I mean, it's the same really for a lot of people. If they put $10,000 in, they put $1 million in. The biggest emotional thing to it is they don't want to look wrong, or they, you know, a lot of people don't tell their friends when they bought Bitcoin because they're embarrassed if things go sideways. So I want to share this video with you, get your take on it, and then talk about the difference between signal and noise and what you see is really going on. Because on Instagram, on YouTube, you'll often see people saying, oh, BlackRock is going to co-opt it, governments are going to co-opt it, it's the CIA, Michael Saylor is going to control the whole network. So
of course,
let's get your reaction to this video and go from there. So we'll watch it here.
Because nobody wants to know the truth, and that's why I'm wearing a mask, because I'm getting the truth out there.
Jeez. So what you're saying is everything else other than Bitcoin is a Ponzi scheme?
Yes, but there's something more to it. So when I say Bitcoin, I'm referring to the protocol that commoditizes data. Now, Satoshi Nakamoto did a genius thing when he created Bitcoin. He created all genuine Bitcoin legacy addresses to start with the number one. So if you change the protocol, you cannot have the number one as a legacy address, because the number one will only accept payments in Bitcoin that has gone through the Bitcoin protocol. Now, when these central banks wanted to corrupt Bitcoin, they colluded with the exchanges to list their alternative central bank created currency as BTC, so it stole the market price. But what they didn't want people to know is that the legacy addresses now no longer start with the number one, which means it's not Bitcoin. It's not gone through the Bitcoin protocol. It's a centrally controlled, worthless piece of shit. And that's the one that's at $100,000 right now, with almost a $2 trillion market cap. It's the biggest fraud in financial history ever.
Really? Right.
Sensational claims there. What does Tony have to say about it?
Before I get into this video itself, let's rewind a little bit to understand, you know, why Bitcoin is such a big deal and why I'm such a believer in it. Until you live on to the flip side of the fiat world and you understand, you know, what it's really about, Bitcoin can, for you, will be just like another speculative asset, which I think is still the problem out there. Most people look at Bitcoin as an investment, as something to diversify into and what have you. But the real issue is that very few people understand what money is.
Yes.
Since day one, we were brainwashed to think that, you know, government-issued paper is valuable, has money, that's what we have to work for, put it in a bank and what have you. That's the lie. That is fundamentally the root of all the problems. It's not money. It's controlled essentially by organized crime. And the whole reason for its existence is to censor, control, and surveil. That's the fiat world. There is no other purpose for it, which is why if you go back in history and you see all these endless wars, like who pays for them? How is it even possible to fund them other than folks that have an access to an easy money printer where they essentially live for free at the expense of all of us.
Yes.
So we go to work like a bunch of slaves, some 9 to 5, to work for worthless paper that's debased in real time, and they tax us on it. So at the end of the day, what are we really doing, right? But until you have an alternative that casts a spotlight on this Ponzi, you think that's just normal, that's just the way it is. Until you go through a Lebanon event where your entire life is essentially rug pulled from underneath you, and once that experience flows through your veins, there is no going back. Once I discovered Bitcoin, it opened my mind to so many things that fueled so much anger and rage and like disbelief as to how can I, of all people, have lived for so long under the illusion of, you know, being intelligent, successful, and all that, when all of it was a lie. And so Bitcoin right now, when it was born in 2008, it was sent to the world as a gift by someone else or a group of people who have presumably also gone through something similar to me. And it was just their response to the world. It was the middle finger to governments and banks. Enough is enough. We are gifting the world now with a way to opt out. In the beginning, everybody ignored it. Oh, that's funny money, internet, you know, for geeks and all that stuff. Thankfully, that's what happened, because it wasn't strong or decentralized enough for it to get to the stage that it's at now. Fast forward a few years, it's impossible to stop Bitcoin. But you need to understand what it is. It's not a speculative asset. It's not a stock. It's not something that you buy and hold to sell for dollars or other worthless garbage. It is money. We have the dollar, the euro, whatever local currency, and now we have Bitcoin.
Yes.
But the main difference in Bitcoin is that no one controls it. There's no government that can manipulate it. There's no central bank that can make decisions for it. It exists enshrined in code, powered by energy. So that's the value of Bitcoin. And the real understanding is when 8 billion people finally realize that this is money. Instead of saving in dollars or euros, now you can save in Bitcoin and transact with anyone else at any point in time without any permission, with any amount of money, really. So,
I just want to make an observation here for people sitting at home. Like, this really is a Matrix kind of moment, right? Where you remember the moment where Morpheus looks at Neo and says, "Once you take this pill, there's no going back."
Absolutely.
And I want you guys to witness something that is so obvious that most of you have probably missed it. When was the last time that you really used a bank account?
Never. Since 2019.
Okay, so we're in 2025. So here I'm sitting with a guy with a multi-million dollar business in fiat terms that looks quite healthy. You're not starving. You've built a thriving company. You've got some of your employees' team here with you.
Yeah.
And you've built this business that exists in this world, and you've done very well without using what everybody watching this calls money. And you were broke in Lebanon. So when people say money has no value, like, how are you sitting here in a 5-star hotel attending events that only accept fiat if you only accept Bitcoin? Of course you can live on Bitcoin. People have this fundamental, enormous shift that needs to happen in their brain to realize that there are people like Tony that only accept Bitcoin. If you want to buy, if you want to do business with Tony, if you want to rent your venue to Tony to run a Bitcoin Way event, you will only get the contract if you accept Bitcoin.
Correct.
If you want business cards, if you want Tony to give you a business card business, you have to accept Bitcoin or you'll choose another supplier.
Absolutely.
This is the reality that there are people living in this world. I was showing people before, they say, how do you use Bitcoin? I open up my Apple Wallet Pay and I say, look at all these transactions. See that? It's my MasterCard debit card attached to my Bitcoin account. So I live in the same way, but using Bitcoin. So Bitcoin offers this alternative universe that is money. And again, guys, all of you are spending money every month. If you put that money into Bitcoin, pay your living costs in Bitcoin as we do, and the rest stays in Bitcoin, it's the same thing.
Absolutely.
So moving on to this kind of video where a guy comes on, he's got a golden mask, it immediately catches your attention, and he starts throwing around these technical ideas that are above most people's pay grade. What do we need to focus on here?
Okay. I call this pure noise, and I'll try to explain it in a very simple way. In Bitcoin's first days, everybody ignored it, laughed at it, mocked it, whatever the case may be. You fast forward 16 years now, it has gotten so much attention now that the wrong people are focused on it. And by that, I mean governments, institutions, and what have you. These people do not like Bitcoin. No matter how much good they talk about it, at the end of the day, they cannot like it because Bitcoin was created to obsolete them.
Yes.
Okay? Bitcoin is created for the separation of money and state. It's like oil and water. The two worlds cannot coexist. So they tried to attack it in the past. Many countries tried to ban it. Many countries tried to make it illegal numerous times. They all failed. Why? Because it's based on peer-to-peer technology. You cannot stop this. No matter who says what, no matter what they try to do, it is impossible to stop it. Most people don't understand this. They still think somehow there has to be a way where some government or some institution is going to ruin it. And that's fundamentally based on fear and lack of knowledge. Once you understand the protocol, you understand that this is not something that's doable. And the simplest example that I can refer to that most people are surely aware of is the simple file sharing of music, movies, and software. How many times in the last 15 years have governments tried to threaten people with jail time, with fines, and what have you for doing illegal music sharing? Countless.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the percentage of piracy today? At 80 or 90%. So they couldn't stop it. So if you can't stop something as meaningless as music sharing, do you honestly think they're going to be able to stop peer-to-peer money?
Yeah.
The only mechanism human beings have to regain full control of their lives, their full time and energy, and not have to report to anyone. That is a very empowering position to be in. Self-custody is unconfiscatable power, and it literally changes the way you walk through this world. You are no longer asking for permission, like, at all.
Keep up.
It was an extremely painful year for me to get back on my feet. Like, don't look at this now. This came through many years of hell before. And I'd say now I'm sort of like have my head above water. But until then, no one accepted Bitcoin. No one wanted to listen to what Bitcoin was because everyone was in such a dire state, they just had to eat. So what's the quickest way to having bread on the table? Well, it's what you've always been accustomed to, right? I had to fight through all of this because I knew that if I went back to that system, I was setting myself right back up to getting obliterated at some point. Most people have not lived through something like this, so it's very hard for them to conceptualize like how big that the evil of the fiat world is because it hasn't touched them personally yet. But it's coming. Because that collapse in Beirut isn't isolated to one country. It's happened in Venezuela. It's happened to many other places. Why? Because the mechanics, the root of the problem is the same. Money printing out of thin air. And right now we are witnessing the end of that Ponzi scheme. So there is an option. As of 2008, I keep saying this all the time, the fiat world has become optional. You don't have to live in it. Yes, it might take you a few extra steps to exit completely, but it's not a race. But it has to begin with the fundamental understanding and killing the fear that this is something that can be stopped or that someone's going to come and co-opt it. And so what we're seeing now, in my opinion, is an attack on Bitcoin by the very, you know, framework that was created to replace.
So how are they doing it now? Because they're doing it differently now, right?
Absolutely.
So they figured out that a head-on attack by saying you're banned from doing it doesn't work, right? Like in China, they made it illegal and a shitload of Chinese people still own Bitcoin, right? Because they can't stop it.
Absolutely.
So what is the next way that they try to co-opt it?
They attack Bitcoin by embracing it.
Wow.
They call it the next best thing. We're going to adopt it for national security, blah, blah, all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
As long as you use our version of it.
Yes.
The Bitcoin ETFs, the Bitcoin treasuries, you custody your Bitcoin with a bank that we control.
Mm.
So basically, keeping you dependent on them. Bitcoin wasn't created for this. You don't need them, like at all, zero. Not a single connection between a human being and a centralized institution is required anymore when you live on a Bitcoin standard.
Yeah, we had this discussion just now in the bar with an Irishman who said, I'm into USDT stables,
absolutely,
stable coins. And he was thinking, well, they can't stop me using USDT on the blockchain transfers. He said, of course they can, right? So explain that to us technically.
A stable coin is a central bank digital currency that hasn't been weaponized.
Yeah.
The governments won't come out and create their own central bank digital currency because they know like the word about this is out and it's bad news no matter how you frame it. So what do? They market it using private companies, stable coins that everybody knows already and you know it's adopted you know pretty much worldwide. However, do you think a company like Tether, if the US government tells it you have to do this, you think they're going to go up against it?
Of course. If the government suspects that people have KYC'd to get onto an exchange to get their Tether, if that person gets in bad favor with the government,
yes,
the government just makes one phone call to Tether, which is based in the US.
Absolutely.
And says, hey, this guy, stop.
Stable coins are central bank digital currencies that simply have not been weaponized yet. But when the time is right, I can almost guarantee you it will happen.
They're called private companies. They're issued by private companies, but they're private companies that live within the jurisdiction of a government.
Absolutely.
So when you say they are central bank digital currencies, what you mean is they're issued by companies that exist at the good grace of the government.
Of government. Right. So if the government claps, they will dance. They will not stand up for sovereignty. They will not care about you. They
and
will
this
obey
is the
and
issue with anything centralized.
Absolutely.
Because at the end of the day, they operate at the good grace of the government.
Absolutely. What we are witnessing here is something that the world has never seen. A real-time separation of money and state, which has never happened through the entire history of Earth.
And this is the other thing, Tony, is like you mentioned right at the start of the interview that, and I'll be talking here on Saturday, and most people here are going, and even my brief to speak here was like, can you talk about why people should allocate to Bitcoin, right? That's an interesting question in itself, right? But they're really talking about why it should be part of their portfolio instead of why they shouldn't switch out their entire base for counting everything into Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
We're Titans.
So, you know, sorry, I've lost my train of thought. So when you look at it through that lens and you look at ETFs, for example, ETFs are another example of paper or centralized Bitcoin. Instead of owning it and having it in a cold stored air gapped wallet, right, and we could talk about some of the things that you've got coming and you've been working on the Bitcoin way to actually truly privatize that ownership so it's yours. When you own ETFs, it's the same thing. These are ETFs issued by a company, most likely BlackRock or similar, and you KYC'd to buy that exposure to Bitcoin.
Absolutely.
Through a company that is centralized and operating at the good faith of the United States.
Absolutely. And this is why I say it's an attack.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to spin a narrative, hoping that enough people believe it or comply with it so that they remain relevant or in control. You cannot regulate Bitcoin. It doesn't belong to any government. Like, they have no jurisdiction or authority over it, other than pushing a narrative to have enough people believe that they do. But as soon as you understand the technology, it becomes very quickly apparent that you can opt out, ignore this world completely, and there's nothing they can do about it.
Mm.
That is the power of Bitcoin, which is why you never hear any government or institution mention two words, self-custody.
Yeah.
Why? Because that is the revolution. Bitcoin was created for self-custody. That is how you, me, and 8 billion people take full control of our time and energy without any theft anymore.
And this comes down to me to the very spiritual heart of what Bitcoin is, because we are all granted a certain amount of time on this earth by something higher than a government. Now, whether you believe in God or whether you believe in whatever you believe in, there's this spiritual component that is beyond government. And then when you invest or give or exchange this time, which is the sacred spiritual thing that you have, with another human being directly, if you and I enter into any kind of exchange of I'll do this in exchange for that, Bitcoin gives you the opportunity to make that a sacred agreement between the two of you if you're doing it peer-to-peer through cold storage transfer, right?
Absolutely.
As opposed to what I do here where I take some of my Bitcoin, I do it for convenience, but it's not the spiritual nature of it because most people still don't have the ability to accept a direct send.
Absolutely.
So I do it through the MasterCard rails. But if I've got $20,000 on my Bitcoin MasterCard in Bitcoin each month and I'm spending it, it's still living inside a world that is a corporation.
Correct.
Existing at the good grace of the government, that at any time they could cut those rails off.
Absolutely.
And this is why people need to have on their, in their phone, in their life, the ability to accept and pay with Bitcoin so that the government doesn't get involved in how I choose to spend my sacred gift of time.
Absolutely. And look, in my case, Bitcoin literally saved my life. When I was completely obliterated financially, I needed every penny, so to speak, to live. I wasn't doing this in order to build a portfolio. I was living hour to hour. And there are many places around the world, people that have been debanked for literally their whole lives, that for the first time ever now, they know what a savings is. And they're not doing it in a bank. They're doing it on a phone in their own wallet. So there's millions of folks that are using Bitcoin for the purpose that it was created, peer-to-peer money. They go to work, they earn $20, let's say, worth of Bitcoin. They use $15 of it to pay for food. They are living on a Bitcoin standard. And so if it wasn't for these folks using it as money, Bitcoin would have no value. Like, there's also this attack on the narrative that Bitcoin is only digital gold. It's a commodity. Never sell your Bitcoin. That is complete bullshit. Because if Bitcoin is not used as money, it doesn't remain decentralized and secure. The percentage of people worldwide that can buy and hold Bitcoin, it's like 2%, like financially privileged people can do it. And so if that's all it is, it will be co-opted at some point.
Yes.
But how many people can use it as money? 8 billion people. Can you stop that? Absolutely not. Is it happening? Absolutely yes. Which is why Bitcoin is at the fiat price that it is now. But the worst thing you can do is denominate your wealth using Bitcoin in fiat. It's the most worthless metric, because by fiat terms, Bitcoin's going to go up to infinity, because that worthless piece of paper is headed to zero, 100% certain, because of the infinite money printing that is required, not optional. It is required to keep that entire Ponzi alive. If they don't do it, the whole thing collapses tomorrow.
Because we're seeing it now, like we heard from an African speaker here at the conference talking about how different it is. And I sat next to a gentleman here at the conference who was the head of the largest crypto exchange in Turkey.
Yeah.
And he said, most of the Western world, it's difficult to explain Bitcoin, but you go to most people in the world who've lived in economies where, oh, we had another speaker there talking about the collapse of the Bolivar and the impact that it had on his family. It's super easy to explain Bitcoin in terms of, oh yeah, of course you don't keep the currency the government gives you. It's only in countries like Australia and the US that still are under this illusion that it's stable, and it's not stable.
No.
And so we're seeing now, like Nigeria, for example, this is a country on the continent of Africa with 250 million people in one country in Africa, with millions of people using Bitcoin day to day to pay for their services, knowing that that Bitcoin that's in their wallet is worth the same or more tomorrow, but nevertheless.
Absolutely.
In real terms.
Absolutely.
In real terms.
These guys have been debanked forever. Mm. The government attacked them in every single way you can imagine, tried to impose a central bank digital currency on them, the e-Naira. They threatened them. They told them you couldn't take out more than $40 a month. All sorts of creative attacks. Did they all succeed? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And it failed so miserably that they canceled the CBDC, the e-Naira, because Nigerians, I think, have the highest Bitcoin adoption worldwide. They are absolutely amazing people, some of the most intelligent brains that have found the workarounds against every possible imaginable attack. They found a workaround to it using Bitcoin as money. So my collapse is coming to every country in the world. I am almost 100% sure of it. When it happens depends on the country.
Let's talk about these fears around co-opting and hacking and like what this guy's talking about. You know, people say, you know, Michael Saylor owns 2% of the Bitcoin market. BlackRock own 3 or 4%. What do you say these things? Like, first of all, BlackRock doesn't. BlackRock's clients own it. They custody it.
Correct.
For their clients. So they don't have any control over who buys and sells it from that
Correct.
Collection of holders. But can you just explain the difference? Because a lot of people think about Bitcoin like they think about a public company,
yeah.
meaning that it's controlled by votes and how much of the company you own. But it's not like that in Bitcoin. So maybe you could talk just about why it's going to be possible for them to co-opt this.
Absolutely not. The thing is, in Bitcoin, you have to unlearn a lot of the lies that you thought were true.
Yep.
No one can control Bitcoin, okay? No matter how much of it you own, not Michael Saylor, not BlackRock, not Michael Saylor and BlackRock
Why?
And the U.S. government combined, they cannot.
Why?
Because it's completely decentralized and it's based on, like, there's a lot of consensus in Bitcoin. Like, you can't just impose your rules on it. People just ignore you. They can, right? So, and the other thing is that they're late to the game. Most of the like the mined Bitcoin that's out there is privately owned. Yes. Like there's over, I think, almost 60% of it that's owned by folks like you, me, and other folks.
So Bitcoin, just to be clear on this, Saylor and BlackRock combined, I think, is about 5%, is it, or 6% of the supply?
Something like this.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, to go further, even if they were to buy all of the remaining supply today, I, by my estimation, maximum they get maybe 8%.
Right.
Okay. Even if they had 30%, what influence and decision power do they have on the network?
Yeah.
Zero. Now, the only indirect influence that they can have is, let's say they decide for whatever silly reason, let's say to dump their Bitcoin to cause a price scare. Hmm? That could influence some people's decisions psychologically. It doesn't harm Bitcoin, but it impacts human beings, you know, and their feelings and their emotions and all that. But if you understand the protocol, you're not swayed by these things. That's why people that do self-custody, that understand what Bitcoin really is, don't care about this volatility. It's going to happen. It has to happen. Because what we're seeing is a transition from a corrupt, broken system into one of sound money. And that system is going to attack it. It has to attack it because it's its lifeline to remain relevant. And so this up and down is just part of the process. It doesn't threaten Bitcoin. It threatens you if you get spooked by it. And the only way to fight that is to understand what you actually hold.
How does a change to the Bitcoin protocol happen? Like, let's say that there is a threat coming for quantum and it needs to update to accommodate for a quantum threat.
Yeah.
How would that change in the code unfold? Like, what would practically have to happen?
As far as quantum threats, I don't see that anytime soon. I think we're at least a decade away from it, and there's already millions of eyes working on a solution.
And it would expose all banks and all assets. Everything would be hackable.
If we had a quantum problem, Bitcoin would be the last of your concerns because the entire world would blow up.
Yeah, right.
So,
but how does Bitcoin change happen? Like, what is a consensus network?
I believe it probably be a fork of it. They probably hard fork it, like upgrade it, so to speak, into a version that is resistant to all of this. And you know, there'll be a process to follow to upgrade your wallets and your infrastructure in order to become quantum resistant.
Yeah.
I think this happens very soon. I don't think we're going to wait until we have an attack to get the solution. I think the solution will be readily available way before then.
But for the newbies listening, what is a fork? Like, what does it mean?
It's like a different version of it. Like, right. You make a copy of it, but it's an upgraded version with enhancements and protections and all that that account for all of these
and
scenarios.
And who does that coding? Who does that work?
There's Bitcoin developers worldwide. You know, it's there's a lot of them that are anonymous that are working on the code. There's a lot of private groups that we know of, and some of that we don't know of. Make their contributions to this whole thing. Bitcoin's code is the most watched code in the history of code because it's so valuable and such like an important and critical piece of humanity, that there are so many people obsessively watching it to ensure nothing goes wrong. This is why I'm extremely bullish on the future. And we start seeing this more through like recent events, like the core versus nots thing and all that. This just illustrates to me that there are a lot of people bullishly passionate about protecting Bitcoin than there are those that are trying to disrupt it for whatever moronic reason.
Yeah.
So the quantum resistance thing falls, in that basket.
But the node operators will vote, right?
Yes, of course.
That's how
of course.
It works.
Running a node is a must for every Bitcoin.
Because that's what gives you power as a Bitcoiner, is you get a vote when you run a node,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
But it doesn't matter whether you got $100 million worth of Bitcoin or $10 a Bitcoin.
Correct.
If you've got a node, you get the same vote.
That's
correct?
Right. Absolutely. Every Bitcoiner should be running a node. If you don't like what somebody else is deciding, you can just ignore them. Run your own node. Life goes on.
Right. And so the Bitcoin that people hold is still valid, even if you don't adopt what the other...
Absolutely.
Fork. Yeah.
Absolutely. As long as you hold it yourself,
right,
in self-custody. You don't leave it with an institution. You don't leave it on an exchange. You certainly don't custody it in a bank. You certainly don't involve a collaborative custody, like an institutional collaborative custody, to bring them into your business. You and you alone have to learn the skills to hold and manage and use Bitcoin 100%. They're not hard.
For a lot of Australians listening to this, if you've tried to buy Bitcoin lately, you will know that the banks will try to stop you from transferring what you thought was your money to a crypto exchange to buy Bitcoin.
Absolutely.
And so this is the exact problem that Tony is trying to explain to you right now, that when you leave your Bitcoin on an exchange, it's like leaving your money in a bank.
Correct.
If the bank doesn't like what you want to do with that money, they just say, yeah, sorry, we're going to put that to our security review team.
The compliance
team. The compliance team. Or we're going to put you on hold, or we're going to put you through warnings. You're like, hang on a second, isn't this my money? No. That's where you went wrong. You thought the money you gave us is now yours still. No, we just give you an IOU. There's all these terms and conditions. And we have a government that is dictating whatever they want to dictate. And believe me, they're going to listen to the government before they listen to you when it comes to what you want to do with your money.
100%.
And so self-custody is like having cash in your mattress.
Correct.
You can just pull it out. And then if I want to pay Tony in cash, I don't have to go through a third party intermediary.
Correct.
That's what self-custody gives you. It gives you the power to not have to ask permission from the bank to pay people you want to pay for the goods and services you want. And all of us know what it's like when the bank says, what are you using this money for? What do you need? It's like, none of your business, bro. Like,
absolutely.
So that's what Bitcoin, and I want people to understand this, is that, first of all, BlackRock don't own all this Bitcoin. BlackRock custody this Bitcoin in exchange for a fee.
Correct.
And you, when you do it, take on the risk of BlackRock telling you what you can and can't do, or the government Absolutely. Telling BlackRock what you can and can't do.
Absolutely.
And you pay them for the privilege of losing control.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So they don't really have control over the Bitcoin network. And then you've got the biggest holders like MicroStrategy, that's still what Tony's saying is most of the Bitcoin that's mined, and we're at 99% or something now, that's 99.5%.
The last Bitcoin will be mined long after we're dead, in the year 2140.
Right. But still 90-something percent of the Bitcoin is mined.
It's already
out there.
So
of the mined Bitcoin, it's already in the hands of private individuals.
Correct.
The vast majority.
Correct.
It'll be, at today's prices, it'll be almost impossible for a government or anybody to really co-opt it.
Absolutely. I think 2025 might be the last year where regular folks can go out and actually buy Bitcoin and hold it themselves, simply because, like I said earlier, the wrong players are paying attention to it. And when they vacuum clean their remaining supply, its fiat price is going to be unattainable. So unless you're sitting on hundreds of millions of dollars, you're not buying anything. So how do 8 billion people benefit from this? At some point, they're going to earn their living in sats. Like, no one's going to want to get paid in debasing toilet paper. They're going to want to be paid in real money.
Yes.
Which is Satoshis, Bitcoin, right? Yeah. And so layer twos is where the world scales into. The layer one, the buying the Bitcoin now like you're doing and holding it in self-custody, that's going to be gone. That's going to be like a scarcity, like a financial privilege limited to the tiny amount of people that are paying attention today. Unless, again, you're sitting on hundreds of millions of dollars, it's going to be way out of your reach. So take advantage of it while you can. I mean, everything that's happening in the world now, these scare tactics where you see that volatility, when the price drops, the last thing you want to be is scared. When we see price drops, like, we're happy because we hope more people are paying attention, jumping into the opportunity and buying it. Now, for those that are still counting in dollars and euros, if you think that the $117,000 price today is expensive, reframe your mindset as one penny, because Bitcoin's future is exponentially larger than any gains it had made in its past. And the reason for that is very simple. When it made all these gains, only a handful of people were paying attention. Now you've got the world about to FOMO into it because they realize it's their only play. If they don't do this, you are going to get completely.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see this in countries like Australia, in countries like the UK, and more countries are going to start following. The EU, forget it. In about 5 years, I think it's gone. The Ponzi's at its end. And when you start seeing things like unrealized capital gains tax, taxing unused bedrooms, a view tax, other stupidities like this, that's when you know that you are about to... You're finished. These are like desperate attempts from fear, and they're just throwing anything out there, hoping it sticks so that they can extend their lifeline.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to be a casualty of that blow up, which is going to happen, like if you don't want to live through what I lived through, and I don't wish that on my worst enemy, you are going to have to pay attention.
But Tony said there, guys, especially I know a lot of you are Australians, and my talk on Saturday morning is about why I blew up the Australian dream, right? Sold all my commercial real estate, except one caravan park, which I own with a friend. I sold all my commercial real estate. I sold my principal place of residence, my home, and moved out of Australia. And The reason I did that, guys, is because I could see the writing on the wall. Governments, like on the Gold Coast, the straw that broke the camel's back is when they slid through a view tax, which was that if you have an apartment on the Gold Coast that is above level 4, you have to pay, it was about a 50% increase in your rates.
Unbelievable.
Right?
Unbelievable.
And so I was like, the stupidity of this was, I have a primo beachfront apartment on the sand, $7 million, across the road or further inland. There's guys and girls with apartments that are like looking out over the mountains, not considered premium, $700,000 or $1 million, whatever, for their apartment, but it's on level 6.
Ah.
And their rates doubled, while the rich guy on the beach with a $7 million apartment, no problem. It is absolute lunacy,
yeah,
and it screams desperation. If you look at Victoria, the most indebted city in the world is Victoria, Australia. They have overborrowed. They are in billions of dollars worth of debt. They're now taxing empty bedrooms. Why are they doing this? Because they are going broke.
Absolutely.
They are absolutely broke. And the only way out of it is to tax their way out of it and to print more money. And either one of those things, guys, when they print money, it is stealing from you. Because the money you just went and earned and worked for, as Tony said, you went out and expended this sacred spiritual thing called your time, your life, away from your family and kids, and they get to print it. And it devalues what you have. It is absolute thievery. And when a mortgage gets written in any bank, banks have this special exemption. When they give you a loan, they get to just make the numbers up.
Yes.
They literally manufacture money out of nothing and then say, you now owe us interest for 30 years to pay off this house. Is it any wonder they want to keep the property market up? Because it's a sham. It is an absolute Ponzi scheme.
And here's the thing that most people don't realize is that, as insane as these things sound, when they don't work, because a lot of people are leaving Australia now, like smart money is exiting, right? When there's no other option left, the next move, they're going to seize your bank account.
Yes.
They're going to do it because that's the only play they have left. If all the creative attempts have failed, what's the next logical move? The only thing they have access to, which is all the savings accounts in banks. Australia, Lebanon, UK, Europe, United States, it's all the same shithole, all based on the same Ponzi. At some point, your turn will come, and you don't want to be a casualty of that event. I assure you of that.
You deal with clients from all over the world who come to you for Bitcoin. They come to you for cybersecurity. I don't know if I've got time to talk about that now, but and they come to you for, and that's actually quite interesting as well, helping people privatize their communications, which is something that's coming
yeah.
the Bitcoin way. But you also help people with the Plan B residency,
correct.
Which is getting out of places like Australia and America that are sinking, in the UK,
absolutely.
Where the governments are just trying to grab as much as they can.
Absolutely.
How many inquiries a day are you getting from Australia?
At least 20.
A day?
Yeah, a day, per day.
Just you?
Just me. yes, at least 20, if not more. I mean, I don't count who the guys talk to, but like myself, I'm around anywhere between 12 and 20 a day.
A day.
Yeah.
And how is that relative to others? Is it like Australia in the top 1, 2, 3 of countries?
Australia right now is the number one Exodus location.
Is that right?
Yes.
In the world.
For us. For yeah. us. As far as we're concerned, it's the number one place where people are leaving.
And are the people leaving broke or got money or what are they?
No, they have money because, of course, they need money to leave. But they're voting. They're opting out. They see the writing on the wall and they're not waiting to completely blow up. It's very simple as that.
You know, the funny thing when I left as well, Tony, is I've learned, and especially because I'm a Bitcoiner now, that I hardly use bank
yeah.
at all. Like, I rarely use my National Australia Bank credit card
you don't have
for
to.
Anything. I don't have to.
You don't have to.
And I moved to Cyprus, which has had banking issues, and nobody in Cyprus uses banks. And they're all living fine. They're all living day-to-day lives, which is quite interesting. So I just want to touch on that other piece of your business quickly, which is privacy of communications.
Yes.
And this is something I've been getting a lot more into myself recently. And you were showing me some of the stuff you guys are working on at the Bitcoin Way. The ability to completely privatize your communications. Now, some people, I know when I first started looking at this, people were like, you feel like you're being Kladenstein and like deceptive. And when you start using things like Signal and you start switching your email over to Proton,
yeah.
right mail instead
yeah.
of Gmail.
Yeah.
But the minute you start doing it and you start going, hang on a second, why did I normalize
yeah.
the ability for government to look into my emails and my WhatsApp messages and my text messages? When did that not seem wildly inappropriate that they can at a moment's notice?
Yeah.
And how come everybody doesn't opt in for Proton Mail or Signal. Like, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, of course. It's because we've been brainwashed to believe that that's just how it's supposed to be. We're having somebody in your business that's just watching over you, like Big Daddy, that wants to make sure that little boy is acting the way Big Daddy wants them to. And except, as we've seen clearly, especially during the COVID years, you've seen the true colors of who this Big Daddy is. These are not your friends. These are everything that we saw starting of COVID is a flagrant attack on humanity, because these are a bunch of psychopaths that essentially believe they have the right to rule the world and dictate how each and every one of us has to live, breathe, eat, and live. Like, who the hell are you to decide what I do with my life, yeah, right? But until we had an option to exit their system, you were stuck, except you didn't realize you were stuck because you had nothing like Bitcoin to cast a spotlight on the lie that you've been living. But now that the genie's out of the bottle, there's a lot of lions waking up now. And I think COVID was the point of no return,
yeah,
where they broke everything. It blew up. They thought they had it all under control, and it blew up in their face spectacularly. And now there's no going back.
I'm going to be doing a webinar soon, guys, with Tony on this privatizing of your communications, because it's now my new battlefront.
Yes.
The ability to communicate with you guys, when I onboarded with you guys as a client, everything was done through encrypted, privatized communication.
Correct.
So the discussions I have with Tony and his team about what I want to do with my tokens that are capturing my time in this world,
yeah,
which now is Bitcoin only.
Yeah, yeah.
But my discussions about what I do with that security of value is between us.
Absolutely.
And if the government wants access to it, I'm sorry.
Yes.
You can't. And people say to me, oh, well, you know, I had a friend say to me, well, Adam, good luck with that, because if the government comes along and you've got Proton or you've got, you know, whatever on your phone, they could just, you know, basically put a governmental gun to your head and make you open it, right? And show you what's in your Signal messages or whatever else. But there's actually a solution to that now as well, isn't there?
Of course there is. There are duress codes that'll wipe the device if you feel threatened by that.
Or there are phones and software platforms that actually enable you to have profiles.
Absolutely.
That are encrypted. So if
Absolutely.
You're going through an airport,
look,
you can set your phone to say, if somebody, because in America they do this now.
Yes, yes.
When you go through and they say, open up your Instagram, and they'll do a scan, and if you're anti-Trump, they'll boot you out.
Absolutely.
So you can have a profile. Now, it's not that I'm anti-Trump, right? I'm actually kind of pro-Trump, but you can have a travel profile on your phone.
Yes.
That completely, if you open your phone, there's nothing on there.
Absolutely.
And you can, and they can't find the other.
Look. The more extreme the attacks, the more extreme the pushback is going to be.
Yeah.
The difference is this time is that the pushback doesn't have to be violent.
Mm.
It's completely peaceful.
We eat dead.
There's a lot of more intelligent people on the side of humanity freedom than there are these crazy ones that want to dominate everything and control everyone. So the more they push, the more the pushback is going to happen. And we're starting to see this with like an abundance of new open source movement, which has always existed. But I think recently, in the last 5-6 years, it's been exponentially higher.
Yeah.
And which is why now you start hearing, you know, talks about trying to make code illegal, where they arrest innocent developers just for creating a piece of software that doesn't match a narrative. This is not going to work because, again, there's more numbers on this side than there are on the other side. And the more extreme the pushback, the more extreme the solutions. So,
and people like you and people like me are going to be shining a light on this stuff, right, to our audiences.
Human beings were not meant to be caged, right? You might have thought you were because everything looked normal until things are not. And so there are solutions. You're not doing anything wrong by protecting your privacy. For those that tell me, yeah, but what do you have to hide? I'm like, I have nothing to hide, but it's no one's business what I do in my private life. It's like, yeah, but you must have because you're so gung-ho about the security thing. I'm like, well, if you have nothing to hide, then remove the alarm on your house. Take out all your curtains. Let people watch your wife take a shower. Open the doors. Like, don't do anything. You've got nothing to hide, right?
Yes, yes.
But would you do that?
No.
Absolutely not. Why? Oh, it's privacy. Oh, now you care about privacy. But when you let the government into your business, that's okay because they're allowed.
It's just a principle to me. Like, the older I get, the more I realize that most politicians are morons and absolutely have no moral authority, have less intelligence. And yet we put them on a pedestal. Why? Because they have guns.
Yes.
That's it. When you really think about that, you're talking about tyranny. You're talking about your servitude, yes, under the threat of violence.
Absolutely.
You know, and I looked at it on the weekend when I was at the Toby Robinson event. There's a million people and I think 1,000 cops. Why did 1,000 cops control them? Because they had a gun.
Yes.
That's it. Take the gun away. Then what? Right? So when we were talking before, like this iPhone of mine, after the discussion we had over a cigar before, this, I won't be carrying
an iPhone. It's going to the garbage.
This is going to the garbage.
Absolutely.
I will be going to a Freedom Phone.
Yes.
Which we'll be talking about, guys, in this webinar for those of you that want to get on board with privacy.
Absolutely.
That are interested in, hey, I want what I say between me and my friends.
Yes.
In nobody else's fucking business.
Absolutely. Take back control of your life. It's your right.
Right.
You know, no one dictates what you do, you know, how you raise your family, how you live and breathe. It's your life. Those that don't fight for this, in my opinion, are weak. Like, you have no integrity, like, you have no self-worth if you let yourself be somebody else's donkey. When you have options to, you know, take all the power back into your possession and live your life on your terms. You can do this. 8 billion people can absolutely do this. You just have to understand that there is a solution and you're going to have to want it. If you're okay doing nothing, then you lose the right to complain. That's my view.
I want to encourage you guys watching this to, like, I did this with a dear friend of mine recently, and yeah. I was helping him with some stuff, and he's going through a very messy divorce.
Yeah.
And I said, would you mind if we just actually do this on, you know, on Signal?
Yeah.
A Signal is an encrypted private messaging app that I learned about through you guys.
One of many.
Right?
Yes.
And I taught him about it, and then he opened it. And then he could express to me what he really wanted to say, because he was afraid, because he's going through a horrible legal situation.
Absolutely.
And he was like, holy shit, Adam. Like, I didn't expect to feel how I would feel by this simple change that you've shone a light on. I can actually speak freely now.
Yep.
This is how fucked up it is, guys, that you don't have freedom of communication, because at some level, you're worried about
Zero.
Things. Now that I've off-ramped most of my wealth into private self-custody, I feel like I can speak freely.
Absolutely.
Because I'm not going to have this phone call from the bank saying, hey, you know, your money's now frozen.
And you have to kill the mindset that you're doing something wrong.
Correct.
You're absolutely doing nothing wrong, nothing illegal. You're just being you in a private sense, which is how it was supposed to be from day one. So that brainwashing into thinking that it's okay for certain people to invade your, you know, your boundaries and your personal life, that has to die. And the only one who can do that is you. You have to make that decision.
Yeah, yeah. One thing that's really also been I know that you're kind of against this in some ways, but one thing that's also been a real sense of comfort for me in having a majority of my wealth in Bitcoin now is, what do you do when you need money? Now, even like when I say money, I mean fiat.
Yeah.
Shit money.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, if I really desperately need money now, there are so many places. Like you bank,
You
don't bank, but you help people go to Panama.
Yeah.
In Panama, banks will enable you to put your Bitcoin with them and give
Correct.
You fiat currency.
Correct.
And I think, what were the boys saying? It's about 5% per year.
Yes, the interest rates are anywhere between 5 and 8, and everything is negotiable.
Right.
So there are jurisdictions out there that are welcoming, you know, smart money, that are embracing the change in the world, that are not playing these tyrannical games. They see what's happening, and this is like their golden opportunity to jump to the front of the line and become like the new world countries.
But I want you guys to think about this, right? Like, let's say you've got a bunch of Bitcoin and I need cash for some fiat cash for some reason, an emergency, a funeral, something. I can literally give my Bitcoin to a bank, some of it, right? That will give me the trash cash that I need, the fiat. And they might charge me 5%. So let's say I've got $1 million with the Bitcoin. They give me $500,000. They're going to charge me $25,000 for the year. I can take the $25,000 straight from the $500,000 they gave me and give it back, which is the 5%.
Absolutely.
And I've got this money. And Bitcoin's been CAGRing at 40 to 50% a year for 5 years. Meanwhile, fiat's been debasing at 3 to 10%, depending on the number that you believe.
Correct.
So you borrowed this trash cash that's dropping in value by 3 to 10%, while the asset that you have on deposit is going up by 40 or 50%.
Correct.
And you've prepaid the interest with the fiat funny money they gave you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So think about that.
It's basic math. It's not complicated once you understand the numbers. If you do nothing, the money in the bank is going to zero. If you think you're going to invest somewhere that's going to outperform Bitcoin, I don't know what drugs you're smoking, but your math is completely off. Because on a bad year, Bitcoin does 40%. I think we're going to start seeing unheard of numbers, because as the world collapses again, as countries start to default, people are going to FOMO somewhere. Where are they going to go?
Tony, I think people are addicted to hard mode. Like, we've been sitting here, we heard a talk yesterday, and not to criticize at all, because we love these guys here at the Nomad Capital as well. But there was talks about, hey, you could invest in Africa, and you can invest in, you can invest in. And I'm like, let me just look back over the last 15 years since Bitcoin was born. And let's look at the best performing asset every year for 16 years straight. It's Bitcoin, correct. Bitcoin, every year except 3 years. You could literally just buy Bitcoin and that's it.
It's because a lot of people realize the money is going to hell, but they figure, if I just make more of it, I'll be okay. But you're not solving a problem. You're just extending your lifeline in that problem. At some point, no matter how creative and good you think you are, you will not outpace the debasement rate of money going to zero literally overnight, which is what happened in Beirut. The local currency inflated to like 1,000,000% within 6 days. So what creative idea are you going to have to outpace that?
Not just Beirut.
Yeah.
You know?
Venezuela, other countries, similar countries. So
we're all doing it.
Absolutely.
The Australian dollar, everyone watching this knows this now, and Australians are starting to figure this out, that it's actually not prices going up at Woolies. It's the dollar becoming worth less.
Bitcoin is not volatile. It's the fiat that you're measuring it with that's volatile. One Bitcoin is one Bitcoin from now to eternity. Yeah. It's never going to change.
Yeah.
So, but there's a lack of understanding of what money is. Even in this event, it's still very abundantly clear that there's a lot of education and misinformation around money.
People are seeing it as an investment rather than as a currency.
It is not an investment. It is a savings technology that appreciates in value tremendously.
Yes.
And this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to still hold the asset at the base layer, the on-chain, layer one, in self-custody. Soon, you will not be able to do this.
There will be everybody using an app issued by a third party exchanging paper versions.
Third party or non-custodial, but it'll be on a layer two.
Yeah, a technology or a company.
That's where Bitcoin will scale.
A bank or whatever.
But, you know, the days of bumping into someone and he tells you, I have like 10 Bitcoin. You're like, oh, what the hell? How the hell did you get 10 Bitcoin?
On the blockchain.
On the blockchain.
Not on a ledger.
It'll be unheard of. It'll be like finding a needle in a haystack. Impossible. Like, to conceptualize how valuable that is. Like, we've never seen anything.
It's kind of like, guys, when you, for the most of you watching this, it's when you drive past those mansions on Sydney Harbour or these church buildings in the middle of town on an acre of property.
Yes.
That's kind of what a Bitcoin will be when the world goes digital.
The thing is, even the most maxi amongst us still can't conceptualize the value of scarcity. There's 21 million Bitcoin. You cannot make more of it. Like, no matter what you do, there's 21 million. When 8 billion people start using it or want it, it's basic math. If you're in Bitcoin today, even if you start like right now, you're already holding more Bitcoin than you can possibly ever dream of spending. Once the world realizes that this is the solution to all of their financial problems.
Yeah.
So we get people telling me, oh, but, you know, I have such a petty amount, like a 0.1 or a 0.2. I'm like, why is it petty? Well, because, you know, they're looking at that small, pathetic number and they're judging it.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's the wrong way to think. If you like big numbers, take that 0.2 and convert it into Satoshis. You know, then you have a larger number if that's your thing.
Yeah.
At some point, that Satoshi will have a purchasing power more than a dollar. So if you're sitting on like a 0.10 and there's 100 million Satoshis in one Bitcoin, how many Satoshis is that? That's life-changing money. It's like 10 million sats.
Yeah.
So you have the equivalent purchasing power of $10 million. Real money.
Yeah.
Not debasing money that's controlled by a government or a bank. Real money that you and you alone control. So that has still yet to cement into more people. But we are seeing a tremendous increase of those that are paying attention. This was our third year at Bitcoin Prague. And let me tell you, since year one and year three, there's been like a 180-degree shift in the questions that we ask. It's no longer how high is Bitcoin going to go up or how much of it do I own. It's like, How do I structure this properly? Where do I live? Where do I go? How do I adopt the standard where I don't have to have a bank account anymore? These are the questions that we're getting now, which is even more exciting for me and makes me more bullish on the future.
I think what it is, Tony, is that most people in our generation have not seen the fall of a reserve currency.
That's the problem.
See, you look in World War II, after the war, England lost the status.
Yes.
As the reserve currency because they went broke fighting the war.
Correct.
And so since then, it's been America.
Yeah.
But America is in trouble. And you'd have to be blind Freddy to not know that. Elon Musk has said it over and over. And now you're looking at America trying to save itself with Hail Marys and, you know, the Genius Act and all these types of things. But once we see the fall of the American dollar, and the Bank of America came out a week ago and warned of the collapse of the US dollar. Once we see that, our generation is going to go, holy crap, the American dollar is being replaced with something. That's going to be an enormous moment.
That scenario is my worst fear. Because if 5% of what happened to us in Beirut happens in America, brace yourself. Like, you want to see hell?
But yeah.
We don't have...
This is a country with guns.
We don't have 400 to 500 million owned private assault weapons in Beirut.
Yeah.
When these people get locked out of their bank accounts or realize that they can't buy anything with that worthless paper, what do you think the next move is going to be like?
You're talking robbery, murder, the worst.
I am talking about a horror show that the most creative Hollywood director can't possibly imagine right now.
People doing shit that you've never imagined.
That is what I lived through for almost a year. It was literally live or die. If you were to walk down the street with a nice t-shirt, somebody might assume you have money. That's how basic wealth has been represented now on the color of a t-shirt. And if they suspected that, well, you'd be potentially under attack. If you don't know how to fight, either you get mugged or worse, you get killed. That's the scenario that plays out when everything goes to zero. This is what I lived through.
No, back please.
And so when I tell you it's a horror show like you've never seen before, like there's no words that I can think of to describe it unless I take you and I throw you exactly in that scenario. Which is why in some of my podcasts, I say my wish is to have like a magic button that I can just press and lock everyone out of their funds for only 4 days. Just so that you can taste what it's like to live what I lived through. And I think as soon as people realize that, like, and they feel it in their bones, you'd see an immediate reaction. But as long as you're living somewhere where your cards still work and you're buying your coffee, things are more expensive, yeah, it sucks, but you complain all day but relatively do nothing, you are in a very serious and dangerous delusion. Because that can change overnight, and I suspect that's exactly how it's going to play out. So those that are, you know, paying attention to real news, no distractions, focusing on the real deal and taking that insurance policy, because essentially you can think of Bitcoin as that insurance policy. You don't have to go 100% from day one. But if you do nothing, that is the biggest risk, in my opinion, that you do for yourself and your financial future, is by just doing nothing and thinking, somehow this is going to fail. Your currency, that fiat, is 100% guaranteed to fail.
Like, well, already.
This thing, maybe it fails, but statistically, technologically, the way things are headed, there's no chance of that, at least in my view. So if I have to bet, I'm not betting on the local on fiat currencies.
Tony, it's been a pleasure, mate. For those of you interested in learning more about this, I want to close with this little thought that, you know, there's a link under this video to the Bitcoin Way. And essentially, you know, what these guys do is help you self-custody, but in a way that you can survive a wrench attack.
Yeah.
Your wealth is protected. It is literally unconfiscatable.
Correct.
Even if somebody's got a hammer to your head or a gun to your head, they have strategic ways to manage risk, even if you've got millions of dollars of Bitcoin under your own self-custody.
We teach everyone how to become, quote-unquote, a cybersecurity expert.
Yes. Like,
we handhold you through the entire process. There's no way you get this wrong.
Yeah.
We've curated every product on the market. We continuously do this on a daily basis. You'd be hard pressed to find a more OCD team out there about this than we are. We are obsessed with this because for us, it is not an afternoon project or a side hobby. This is the future of money. This is going to be the world neutral reserve currency, in my opinion. There's no doubt about it. We just have to learn the steps on how to use it. It's just new. It's not rocket science. Mm. And most people don't come from the world of tech, so they automatically assume that they suck at this or somehow they're going to screw it up. You won't. Most people that we work with are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, well into their 80s. None of them have a tech background. All of them are sovereign today.
The experience, guys, is they will create a private messaging channel with you on Signal, so you'll get to start using some of these things that many of you, it'll be new for you. They'll tell you the exact hardware to buy, where to get it. They'll do one-on-one calls with you and step you through each step of the process. And I've done it. And when it comes to the sensitive parts of the, you know, programming of your devices and so on, they'll say, turn the camera off, stop screen sharing with me while you do this thing, and audio only, so only your eyes are seeing what is being discussed.
Correct.
And then they'll say, turn the camera back on now, write this down, do that. It is absolutely detail-oriented. Nobody but you knows how to, what the very, very key things are.
Absolutely.
So, it's done from somebody who has lived through the worst of the worst. You know, I watched the debate just with you guys over a whiskey and a cigar earlier where you were trying to work out a protocol for a new technology you're bringing, going back and forward. You were pushing back saying, no, it has to be absolutely this way. So there's no vulnerability between us and the client. So, guys, I hope you've enjoyed this discussion. These videos that you see online like this are noise. Focus on the main game. Dig into the truth of this stuff and keep going down the rabbit hole because it's worth it.
Absolutely.
The freedom that comes from knowing that you have a technology, a stack, to store your wealth, transact with other people privately, is so profoundly liberating. Just start the journey. Start with buying $100, learning how to self-custody, learn to communicate with each other privately, and join the revolution.
Absolutely. It couldn't be more simple than that. Bitcoin is money. It's not an ETF. It's not a treasury. Nothing fiat related and Bitcoin go hand in hand in the same sentence. Bitcoin is money. It's your savings. It's your lifeline. Adopt it. Learn how to use it. That's it. It couldn't be more simple than that. As long as you master these skills, you are untouchable.
Yeah. Tony, thank you for the time, mate.
Thank you,
mate. Let's get into this party.
Absolutely.
And get going.
Let's go have a few drinks.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.